You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to today's podcast, ASCO 2026 Encompass Experience, an immersive exploration of the latest in oncology care. We are pleased to be joined by Dr. Joshua Richter, Associate Professor of Medicine at the Tisch Cancer Institute, Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, and Director of Myeloma at the Blavatnik Family Chelsea Medical Center at Mount Sinai in New York. We are also joined by Dr. Richter's colleague, Michelle Lin, a nurse practitioner at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Today, we'll discuss some exciting new data in multiple myeloma that were presented at this year's ASCO, with a particular focus on BCMA target bispecific antibodies. We'll also explore the practical implications of these research findings and how emerging clinical evidence may influence patient care. So let's get started. Welcome to Dr. Richter and Michelle Lin. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on ASCO 2026 Encompass Experience. It's such an honor to share this forum with a celebrity like Dr. Richter. Dr. Richter, you know, we've had several trials of bispecific antibodies presented in the relapse refractory space where these agents are currently involved. Would you tell us about the highlights of these studies and your impression on the data?
Absolutely. So I think what we've come to know over the last several years is that CAR T-based therapy seems to be one of the most powerful tools to treat our patients. But we recognize that not everybody has access to this type of advanced technique. So we're really looking towards using bispecific antibodies as off-the-shelf options to treat some of our patients with relapse and refractory disease. And although these agents have traditionally been approved in later line therapy, we've seen a number of studies now looking at bispecific antibodies in the early relapse. More recently, we saw the MajesTEC-3 data, which looked at the combination of teclistamab and daratumumab in early relapse with essentially a flat survival curve, with a hazard ratio of 0.17 at 36 months. Over 83% of patients were still in remission, and progression-free survival and overall survival were the same. But we recognize in that subset that most of those patients were not CD38 refractory, not refractory to daratumumab. So this year at ASCO, they presented the MajesTEC-9 data. MajesTEC-9 looked at teclistamab monotherapy in the early relapse, and this is emerging as an extremely vital tool to provide massively improved outcomes for patients in early relapse over the current standard options such as PVD and KD. And although the median progression-free survival is not yet reached, at 18 months, around 70% of patients are still in remission. So we recognize that even in a CD38 refractory group of patients, teclistamab monotherapy may be an optimal choice, especially for patients who are not planning to go on to CAR T-cell therapy. Additionally, we looked at a number of other BCMA-based assets, including linvoseltamab and etentamig, to try to figure out which type of drug is going to be the best. There was one study that looked at a matched-adjusted indirect comparison looking at linvoseltamab compared with teclistamab in triple-class exposed relapse refractory myeloma. Now, these matched-adjusted indirect comparisons, or MAICs, are kind of the off-the-shelf way of trying to mimic a head-to-head trial that we're not always able to run in real life. And what this data showed is that it seems to be that there are some advantages of giving linvoseltamab in this group of patients over teclistamab. Now, this may be for a variety of reasons. Again, the MAIC doesn't go into all of these details, but one of the things that we recognize is that linvoseltamab seems to be active in a number of places where the BCMA target may be mutated, and this is a sense where teclistamab may not be as active in these settings. So I think in our practice, we've used linvoseltamab, especially in later relapse patients who may have already had prior BCMA therapy with belantamab or a CAR T. Additionally, we saw some of the updated data with etentamig, another really powerful BCMA-based therapy. And the amazing thing about this one is not only is it highly effective and not only are the CRS rates low, but the drug doesn't have step-up dosing and goes right to monthly administration. This is very user-friendly for both practitioners and for patients. This way, you don't have to go through that step-up period of more frequent dosing when you start the therapy itself. Additionally, we found some other studies presented at ESCO looking at ways to optimize the way that we practice, including looking at optimal dosing for the redirect study. This was a study that combined teclistamab and talquetamab in patients with extramedullary disease. And in addition, there was some data from Krina Patel and others looking at OPTEC and OPTAL basically strategies for using prophylactic tocilizumab in patients receiving teclistamab or talquetamab in relapsed and refractory myeloma. And I think what we've seen in our clinic is that when we give prophylactic toci, we see CRS rates less than 10%.
What are your impressions of the data and what stood out to you?
What really stood out to me is that we're now able to use bispecific antibodies to get, in a sense, functional cure for some of our patients. You know, we're very excited about CAR T therapy, but if you look at the current landscape of the United States, there are only about 160 sites that give CAR Ts, which means most patients won't have access to this. The reality is, with the proper infrastructure, any infusion center can give a bispecific antibody. And with some of these studies like Majestic 3 and Majestic 9 showing that bispecifics in early relapse can provide extremely durable remissions, we can take some of our older patients, not expose them to the prolonged hospitalization and all the what's involved in a CAR T, but give them an off-the-shelf product and maybe keep them in remission so long that they never relapse.
Are any of these results practice-changing or practice-informing?
Absolutely. So I think if you look at the current landscape in the United States, most of us are giving CD38-based therapy in second line, a regimen like daratumumab and pomalidomide or isatuximab and carfilzomib. However, there's a rising percentage of patients who are CD38 refractory going into second line. So we can't just depend upon those therapies anymore. So to me, as we see about 25% of patients in the U.S. progressing on CD38 in the front line, expected to rise up to 50% by 2030, we now have the ability to give drugs like teclistamab in early relapse, and this is how we're changing our thoughts about what to do with 1 to 3 prior lines of therapy in relapsed myeloma. Michelle, let me throw it back to you. From an advanced practice provider perspective, how are you thinking about some of these findings?
I think these findings are actually very exciting because it is a ultimate equalizer. For example, giving tocilizumab before the first step-up dose, preventing CRS, patients being able to finish their step-up dosing on time quickly without significant CRS or ICANS, I think that is a great, great idea. And we're already using that practice. And we're able to finish the cycles on time without significant side effects. I think, you know, this will be a great finding for the community practices and a great equalizer for somebody that lives out in the rural community versus somebody that's living in the city. At ASCO, we also saw investigation of BCMA-targeted bispecifics in other clinical settings. How are some of the new data we heard at ASCO shaping your thinking about where bispecifics might go beyond relapse refractory multiple myeloma?
So I think what we've begun to understand is that by targeting BCMA, we don't just get rid of malignant plasma cells, but we get rid of a variety of other immune cells. And in reality, these agents can be used across a variety of different clinical settings, both in the oncology space and outside of the oncology space. For example, we have several studies at our institution looking at bispecific antibodies in the treatment of lupus, as well as in the treatment of Dupixent refractory food allergies. But what was really interesting that they presented at ASCO was the data looking at bispecific antibodies in high-risk smoldering myeloma. And there are a few studies in particular, one that utilized linvoseltamab and the other that utilized elranatamab, both BCMA-targeted bispecific antibodies, in hopes of taking patients with high-risk smoldering who may ultimately progress to symptomatic disease requiring full therapy and hoping to prevent them from ever developing full-blown myeloma. And in these two different studies, we saw extremely high rates of response and the overwhelming majority of patients not progressing to symptomatic disease. And this is a very hot area of research, and a lot of great data is also coming out of Dana-Farber with Omar Nadim and his colleagues, Irene Gobriel, looking at using both CAR T and bispecific in hopes of perhaps curing patients with smoldering disease. So really exciting data right there.
We also heard some exciting presentations in amyloidosis, including results in registrational trial for linvoseltamab in this setting.
So yeah, there were two really impressive studies that came out of ASCO in the amyloid world. The first was the Linker-AL2 study, and we've already seen linvoseltamab approved by the FDA on July 3rd of last year for relapsed refractory myeloma based on the Linker-MM1 study, of which our group, Mount Sinai, was one of the lead accruers. And now we see the role of BCMA bispecifics in relapse AL amyloidosis. And over the last several years, thanks to the Andromeda study, we've seen Darasyborg-D take hold as the standard of care and upfront management of AL amyloidosis. But once the disease comes back, things get a lot harder to manage. But what we've now seen with drugs like linvoseltamab, we can use BCMA-based bispecific antibody therapy to markedly reduce plasma cell burden, markedly reduce light chain burden, and actually show evidence of organ function recovery. So I think that BCMA bispecifics are really going to become part of our armamentarium for any patient that relapses with AL amyloidosis. And even more exciting to some level was the CARE study that looked at anselimimab, not the easiest drug to say, as an antifibrillar drug in amyloid. And unfortunately, across the last decade, there have been a number of positive phase 2 studies for antifibrillar drugs. However, none of them had positive phase 3 studies, and we're still left with treating the plasma cell portion of amyloid and not the fibrils themselves. However, the CARE study, although not meeting its primary endpoint overall, did show positive activity in kappa-restricted AL amyloid. And although it's the less common phenotype, the fact is we may be on the verge of having our first FDA-approved therapy for AL amyloidosis that doesn't just target the plasma cells, but actually targets the fibrils themselves to regain earlier organ function. And in reality, for kappa-restricted amyloid, this reduced all-cause mortality and cardiovascular-related hospitalization. So this may lead to a gigantic leap forward in the management of these patients. Michelle, please tell us about the toxicity profile of bispecific antibodies and best practices for recognizing and managing adverse events. You know, we've talked a little bit about the clinical trial data, and does that reflect the real-world practices? That's what you're seeing in clinic.
Absolutely. You know, the Majestic 3 trial showed that prophylactic use of IVIG actually helped with decreasing mortality related to infection. Mount Sinai has already been giving IVIG with BCMA targeting bispecifics, and I believe that has greatly dropped, you know, major hospitalizations and, you know, infection-related complication. We've also been administering TOCI with step-up doses and been able to safely get patients, you know, through their step-up dosing without any delays.
What best practices have you adopted for recognizing, monitoring, and managing bispecific antibody-associated toxicities, and how might you share this to be applied in the community setting?
So regarding managing CRS, I believe this should be twofold, and this is what we've actually implemented at Mount Sinai. We do have a bispecific hotline where if patients experience symptoms related to CRS, ICANS, they can call and explain their symptoms, you know, once they're home. And, you know, based on that phone call, one of the providers suggests, A, either you need to come into the emergency room, or, you know, B, maybe we can have some, give you some dexamethasone and manage this and see you next day outpatient, or C, you know, you can take some dexamethasone and we'll see you next day in clinic. The other second prong solution that we actually implemented is the RN check-in program. So with step-up doses, there's, you know, day one step up, 2 days later you gave the next dose, and then 2 days later you give the full dose in case of teclistamab. Between those doses, RNs will actually make phone calls to patients and do a quick assessment. Do you have a fever? Do you have a headache, rash? Do you have pain? Do you have muscle aches? And based on these symptoms, you know, the RNs can, you know, help navigate patients to their next step. And actually, that's been a really great way of managing these step-up doses. In terms of infections, we've practiced universal herpes simplex, varicella zoster virus, and PJP prophylaxis. We've also been very good about managing Hep B reactivation by giving prophylactic entecavir. IVIG prophylaxis is also great for BCMA-targeted bispecific antibodies, since these patients tend to have profound hypogammaglobulinemia. In terms of infections, we don't have to worry about prophylactically treating fungal infections. in terms of, you know, neurologic toxicities, you know, you have to perform the ICE assessment. This is the best way to see how patients are affected in terms of their orientation, attention, handwriting, and their ability to follow command. And it's a good way to assess, you know, their ICANS toxicities.
So can you share with us some of the strategies to improve interdisciplinary communication to optimize toxicity management?
So in terms of managing these toxicities for community practice settings, I think it's really important that we give a clear guideline and a clear handoff to community practitioners.
So we recognize that in the world of bispecific antibodies, we have three FDA-approved BCMA-targeted antibodies and one GPRC5D-targeted antibody, and the side effect profile is quite different between the two. Although they can both cause infections, the infection rate is actually higher with the BCMA-targeted agents because they also deplete the CD19-positive B cells, whereas the GPRC5D-based drugs like talquetamab, although they do have a lower infection rate, they do have other toxicities that are on-target, off-tumor, including dysgeusia, weight loss, and rashes that can be seen on the palms and the soles of the feet.
Therefore, it is important to stay ahead of these side effects. We know that oral toxicity is a common side effect with talquetamab, and when we know that patients have experienced weight loss initially, it's important to communicate that with the community provider by saying maybe, you know, patients need to see a nutritionist down the line. We need to monitor weight a little bit more carefully, but it's important to give a clear sign out as to, you know, what we're watching out for and what we can, and we can also do check-ins in between to see that patients are tolerating these therapies well without significant side effects.
So even though we've been using these regimens later line therapy, now that we can use them in early lines and in some of these novel combinations, any other pearls of wisdom that you can pass along to our community practice colleagues?
I think what we can pass on is that, you know, bispecifics are going to be used earlier in therapy. You know, we all need to become a little bit more comfortable with it. And I think staying ahead of these side effects is really important in terms of infection, in terms of, you know, managing the oral toxicities, giving patients IVIG, PJP prophylaxis, and skincare. And the more we can communicate with them clearly, I think the better it's going to help our patients with their outcome.
So we'd really like to thank everyone for listening today. You know, I think there's a lot of great data that's coming out of the congresses like ASCO, and the world of myeloma is changing very rapidly. And I think now with the tools at our fingertips that we have that we talked about today, like the bispecific antibodies, we're achieving such deep and durable remissions, we're actually able to functionally cure some of our patients.
Well, thank you everybody for listening. We have a lot of exciting data. I think a lot of what we found in ASCO 2026 annual meeting shows that, you know, a lot of our new findings is going to provide more treatment and options for our patients that are not necessarily close to academic centers or cities. So I'm really excited about that. And, you know, I think we're getting much better at managing these toxicities. So that's even a better news for our patients.
That's about all the time we have for today. Before we conclude, we would like to thank Dr. Joshua Richter and Michelle Lin for sharing their insights on emerging data presented at the ASCO 2026 annual meeting. We also thank Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, Inc. for providing an independent educational grant in support of this CME-CE activity. Finally, thank you to our audience for joining us today. We appreciate your participation and hope you found this discussion valuable. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. Please join us for another episode of this podcast series on ASCO 2026. For more podcasts and other accredited activities, please visit us online at www.medlearninggroup.com. Thank you.